at 5. Bomb disposal experts have arrived to help examine a police car that they say may be significant in the Manchester Arena attack inquiry. A cordon's been put up around the Nissan Micra in Rusholme. Earlier, Prince William was in the city to meet some of the victims and those who helped the injured. Julian Williams is a St John's ambulance volunteer. He says the Duke had some kind words.
It's really touched us all to see that the royal family have taken a keen interest. And of course, we had the Queen visiting the hospitals and to actually meet Prince William and shake his hand. And he was asking the questions, how are you? Do you have enough support? So for me, it was really touching to have that.
A Conservative candidate has been charged over allegations about his election expenses in 2015. Craig McKinley insists he's done nothing wrong. Donald Trump's decision to pull the US out of the Paris climate change deal has led to a political row in the UK. Andy Hayes reports.
So we're getting out.
Donald Trump's words have been met with dismay by the Lib Dems' Vince Cable.
It's taking an essentially trivial and unscientific approach to a massive global problem.
Theresa May told Donald Trump she was disappointed. Jeremy Corbyn says that's not good enough.
It's a dereliction of both her duty to this country and our duty to our planet.
But the PM says she's been direct with the president.
I made it clear that the UK would have wanted the United States to stay within the Paris Agreement.
President Trump says he is prepared to negotiate.
Nigel Farage says UKIP shouldn't be written off despite only getting around 5% in the polls. He says people's voting intentions appear to be pretty fluid. British Airways is altering a wording on its website about how passengers hit by last weekend's disruption can claim compensation. Insurers accuse the airline of causing confusion. And the boss of Sainsbury's has had his pay packet cut by 16% because of a big fall in profits. But Mike Coop still made £2.3 million last year. That's the latest. I'm Victoria. Lawrence.
Bristol Community FM 93.2.
It's Friday, it's 5 o'clock. Welcome to BCFM's Politics Show. Tony Gosling, and with me for the first hour tonight are Bristol City councillors from three of the four main parties in the city contesting next week's general election. Although they're not in the city here, of course, that's Westminster. We've had Lib Dems on both of the last 2 weeks, which is why they're not here tonight. So, representing the Conservatives, councillor for Westbury-on-Trim and Henleys, Jeff Gollop, for the Greens, councillor for Ashley Ward, Jude English is here, and for the Labour Party, we're joined by one of Mayor Marvin Rees's close confidants, councillor for St George West, Asher Craig. After the 6 o'clock news, the West's kingmakers are huddled together again with Kissinger and other war criminals until Sunday, holed up in the Westfields Marriott Hotel Chantilly, Virginia, just a stone's throw from the White House and the National Reconnaissance Office. Although those that run our media are there, will they be reporting on what goes on? Yes, the annual Bilderberg meeting with the richest and most powerful people we don't elect in the West get together in secret once a year. With some educated guesswork, we try and deduce what they won't tell us. Plus 50 years since the beginning of the end of the UN Charter. That's 20 years after it had been agreed to. And while Britain was bopping away to the Beatles, Israel was allowed to grab thousands of square miles of Syria, Jordan and Egypt in the 1967 Six-Day War, in a theft of territory which is a running sore to this day, and a fascinating incident, the secret Israeli attempt to sink the USS Liberty, which the US Navy under President Lyndon Johnson incredibly ignored. Plus, terror in the Philippines, and Martin Summers' chance to take us on a tour of the world's hotspots. That's in the second hour after 6 o'clock. On to our news review in a minute, but first, Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. Tonight, lows of 14 Celsius and dry. This weekend, highs are 18 Celsius, mainly sunny tomorrow, mainly cloudy on Sunday with the occasional shower. Highs of 18 degrees next week, some wet and windy weather, but also some sunny spells. Next weekend, the 10th and 11th of June, highs also around 18 Celsius, sunshine and showers. That was Bristol's two-weekend weather forecast from theweatheroutlook.com. So helping us review this week's news are Conservative Councillor for Westbury-on-Trim, Jeff Gollop, Green Councillor for Ashley, Jude English, and Labour Councillor for St George West, Asher Craig. Hi and welcome to the Politics Show.
Hi.
Now, let's start first with you, Asher. Can you just tell us a little bit about what got you interested in politics?
Well, if the truth be known, I've been resisting politics for
about 30 years. I started out as a young community activist, kind of right around the time of the St. Paul's riots. I kind of got involved in campaigning for funding under what was then, I think it was the task force that came to St. Paul's back in those days. But I campaigned hard with a lot of local residents and the local community. We got the funding to build the Malcolm X Community Centre, which was then known as St. Paul's Community Association. Cut my teeth, I suppose, as I said, as a community and social activist over the last 30 years. Been asked many a time to become a councillor and always resisted. I didn't actually like what working in the local authority actually did to people, and I actually felt that I was going to make more of an impact, kind of being on the outside than being on the inside. But now, 30 years later, a couple of years ago, I was posed the question about leadership in this city and whether or not Bristol was ready to elect a black leader, and the issue around equality or lack of diversity amongst leadership within this city. So I wasn't expecting a year following the speech that I made at the Arnolfini that year, I'd end up myself actually running for office. But I felt I needed to, you have to step up or step off.
Can you just explain why it was only until you got an ethnic minority mayor that you would actually go into politics? I mean, surely,
It had nothing to do, because Malvin hadn't been a mayor. Remember, Malvin ran in 2012. It had nothing to do predominantly with it being Malvin. I got contacted by close colleagues of mine who were members of the party, and they asked me, Asha, would you consider running for office? And they offered up certain seats, and I literally deleted the email. I didn't even respond. I didn't have any interest, and I knew Malvin was running. And then a couple of weeks later, I got another email saying, we really would like you to consider running. And I spoke to my children and my partner, and they said to me, listen, Mum, you have been working in the community. This is just an extension of the work that you're doing. So, why not go for it? So with 7 weeks to go, I took a punt and went for it.
Okay. Also, with you, Jude, can you just give us an idea of what your introduction to getting involved as an elected councillor into politics? What's that all about? And how did it happen?
In some ways it's kind of similar, I suppose. Being a community activist, done lots of work over in Hartcliffe and Witherwood for a number of years, actually, working with an organisation called Community Service Volunteers. So I'd been working in social justice and environmental justice for a long time. Before that, I'd been campaigning a lot on lesbian and gay rights. So I've always been a political animal, I suppose. And then it was that kind of natural progression. I joined the Green Party, you become active in your party, people go on committees and do stuff, and then eventually there's that thing where somebody says, you should be a councillor, why don't you stand? So at that point, I decided I would, and first of all, stood in Lawrence Hill, actually. But I live in Ashley, and I'm the councillor for Ashley. But for me, it is about the environment, so I'm a member of the Green Party because I recognise that the other parties don't use that as their main platform, and for me, the main crisis that we're having in politics and the economy and the world is environmental.
Do you want to say something about the reluctance of the Americans? In fact, the Americans have just pulled out of the Paris Climate Agreement, haven't they? This seems to be a bit surprising, because it's actually no point in doing this if everybody doesn't get together and sort the climate out. And the Americans have just taken a step back. Worth mentioning, of course, which I haven't seen much mention of, is that Rex Tillerson, of course, is in charge of US foreign policy at the State Department now. And he's straight from Exxon, the biggest oil company in the world, and suddenly running US foreign policy. So anyway, what do you make of this?
Well, I'd be very happy to say something about it, because I think one of the major problems is, in fact, you've just said it, isn't it? The Americans have not pulled out. The American people as a mass have not pulled out. Mm. In fact, it's just been reported, hasn't it, that Trump said, I was elected to represent Pittsburgh, not Paris. And Pittsburgh, the mayor of Pittsburgh, has just said, actually, we're with Paris. We will be keeping to the Paris Agreement. So that mass, does not speak for the majority American. Of the Americans, that's particularly true. The poor, the disenfranchised, and those who'll be affected by the worst of the climate disaster. Mm-hmm. So I think what we're seeing is an elite that have negotiated their way into power by various illegal means, mm-hmm. and are now putting their, you know, evil plans into action. And in some ways, the fact that Theresa May is not stepping up to say this is bad and whatever, I think is a reflection of the fact that the same sorts of elites are also controlling business and political aspects of Britain. And I could go on and on. Don't, yeah. you know, you'll have to stop me.
Hang on. No, well, I'm not going to stop you, but that's exactly how I think. But, yes, I mean, surely Trump was elected. I mean, this is what he was elected to do. He did say it was part of his election platform. He thinks climate change is massively exaggerated.
It was part of his election platform. And it's quite interesting, isn't it, that in some ways, perhaps those of us who are elected to political positions here and have a certain knowledge of how government and decision-making works, we respect those decisions, but it's a funny one, isn't it? Are elections fair and just? I don't think they are really in this country.
And I would actually say there's a big question mark over that election anyway.
Yes, today equally, yes, election.
Well, a lot of people have said the same about Brexit, haven't they?
Modern elections seem to be somehow not as fair and just as they used to be, although I would argue that they weren't that fair.
Anyway, listen, sorry, I'm going to say I have to shut you up there because it's Jeff's turn. Jeff.
Is it Jeff?
Jeff.
Okay, Jeff.
Jeff, can you just tell us how you got into politics and why the Conservative Party?
Well, I got involved with the Conservative Party because I believed in what it was campaigning for. In terms of Jude or Asher, probably a lot of differences in the things that we believe in, and yet, actually, I still believe in a lot of the same social values. I simply believe in a different way of going about it, and believing that the individual is entitled to retain more of what they earn, and that the state should be controlling less of how that money is spent. And that was what drove me. What drove me to get involved in local politics as a councillor was twofold. But mainly the fact that the area in which I live and which I now represent did not have a secondary school, and there was not an acceptable level of education provision for the residents who live in that area, and I wanted to try and do something about that, and the opportunity came along. Bear in mind the one thing disadvantage I had, that perhaps Asher had more opportunity, was at the time there weren't very many Conservative seats on Bristol City Council, so the opportunity to get involved was relatively limited. Senior councillor stood down, and I had a matter of 6 weeks to decide whether I was going to put my name into the ring or not. And a similar discussion with my wife took the view that actually it was what we both believed in, and it was right to take the opportunity and carry on doing.
But as someone that got into politics on an education imperative in a way, we're now in a situation where we're being told there's going to be 1,000 less teachers here in Bristol, with the really what you can only call swinging education cuts, with a lot of the funding for education being taken out of cities, put into rural areas, and overall being reduced.
Yep. And I don't believe those proposals are the ones that are going to be ultimately implemented. The government have said that there will be no reduction in the spending in schools, and that's certainly what I believe and what we and our local member of parliament have been lobbying for, because Bristol's education story over the last 5 to 10 years has been a really positive story as the standards have improved. We could probably spend 3 or 4 hours debating why that is, but the fact is they have improved, and certainly what we don't want to see is that going backwards, because giving our youngsters the opportunity the start of their lives is the most important investment we can make.
Can I just come in here? Because at the end, we're going to agree to disagree on this one, okay? So Bristol schools are facing £32 million worth of cuts to funding. We have schools in Bristol now writing home to parents asking for them to make £10 contribution a month via direct debit because they are struggling. You know, I saw an email the other day from one school head teacher explaining that they may have to cut the school day. They have to get rid of about 11 members of staff. You know, the list goes on and on and on. So it's interesting that it's, and I will say, though, that there is support across party, because I do know that there are some, you know, Tories and Green Party members across the country that are backing, you know, the move against education cuts. But the thing is that they're being caught, the Conservatives are being caught out, and it's only because the lobby and the sound of the voices of local people, local schools, and others are resounding loud and clear.
Jeff, I mean, the cynical like me would say, well, maybe this is simply because the inner cities and the cities generally tend to vote Labour, and if they're not going to vote Tory, then we're going to take the funding away.
No.
I'd never accuse you of being cynical, but I certainly do not believe that's the case. I think that there are inequalities in the way schools are funded, but the original proposals did not address that, or if they did address it, they totally reversed it and created a far more insecure and unacceptable situation. The fact is that inner city schools need the funding to deliver the opportunities for the pupils that attend them, and if we don't get that funding right, then the damage to our city could be significant.
Jude English for the Greens. This is our future, isn't it, these children?
Well, yes, and I have to say, as someone who until last year was a teacher in a secondary school in Bristol, not the one we're sitting in, I have to say, I do know a lot of teachers, a lot of my friends are teachers, and I was a science teacher. I'm one of those science teachers that is no longer teaching science because of the stresses and strains and the difficulties in schools. I love teaching.
Can you go into that? What was it like?
It's very difficult. A school in Fishponds that I was a science teacher in, you know, budgets for chemicals, for equipment, cut. It's very hard to be a science teacher when you're told you can't have the kit to do the experiments and you can't have the trips that you want to go on and you can't have the technical support for a trained technician that you want in order for you to do your work properly.
What sort of trips had to be cut out then?
Well, I mean, trips like going to at Bristol or things like that, which in some respects schools now they rely on places like that offering free trips to schools who are seen to have children who would benefit. Now, relying on charity isn't really good enough, I don't think. So there's a kind of mixture of that. But I would say it's more to do with the fact that there's not enough teachers, and teachers are overstretched and overworked. And we know that there's a massive, massive fallout in and retention of trainee teachers and young teachers in the profession. It's not rocket science, is it, to look at some of the Scandinavian countries, how they organise their education system, and then look at how we organise ours, and see that testing, constant SATs, constant administration and examination work by teachers drains the system of all energy and joy and doesn't leave young people better off at the end of the day, as far as I'm concerned.
Jeff, I mean, it wasn't the usual suspects the other week. There was a big demonstration against the education cuts here in Bristol the other week. Lots of the professionals were there too. Also, I mean, almost like joining the, well, I won't call them rent-a-mob. It wasn't rent-a-mob by any stretch of the imagination. But the usual suspects that turn up, the lefties that turn up for these things, it was a whole load of professionals too, wasn't it, this time?
And it's clearly something we have to get right. And we've all said this, it's our future, and it is really important.
There's a lot of people that say that the Conservative Party simply is not getting it right, is it?
I think there are significant issues that need to be considered about the way schools are run and the way our money is spent to ensure that we get absolute value for money. I think there are issues about that. But we do have to make sure that we're funding at a level where we have the right teachers and the right resources to deliver. I don't necessarily agree that we should abolish the testing regime, because actually if we don't find a way of reviewing the performance of schools, we cannot see how effective they are in what they do, And I think we have to have a mechanism for doing that. Parents want to see that. Parents want to know how schools are performing. But it's got to be done in a constructive way that isn't threatening to either the children or the teachers.
A lot of this seems to be the policy of Michael Gove. He's the one who famously said the First World War was a just war, which, I mean, I had to actually laugh when he said that. But anyhow, look, Jude, as an ex-teacher, what's your final word on education?
My final word on education is, well, you know, it's the election season and all of us have probably been out canvassing. Now, I was out canvassing last week in one of the leafier parts of Bristol West, a very, very full of students, knocked on a door, got my list, nice young woman came to the door and I asked her whether she would be voting in the election. Oh, I won't be voting, she says. Now, for me, as a woman and a feminist, that is obviously not a good place to be. On further interrogation, the young woman says, well, you know, I don't think it's got any relevance to me. I'm at Bristol University. Why should I bother? You know, obviously I gave her a bit of a chat. Obviously we don't want to be too haranguing, but at the bottom line it was, I don't think I need to. When I asked her why she even bothered to register then, she said that, you know, somebody had made her. Somebody come around the door and register. But I did take a punt at the end and say, well, what are you studying at university? To which the answer was, I am taking an economics degree. Now, if we're living in an education system where a young woman can get probably B's and A's in politics, economics and English, go to Bristol University, and then I have a conversation on the doorstep where she doesn't really understand that economics is a branch of politics and that she should vote, I think that something is sadly wrong. So, you know, anecdote, she's not the only one. I don't know whether you found it as well. It's not just the disenfranchised young people saying, I'm not going to vote. There's a lot of young people that don't seem to recognise what their place in society
also, let's talk about health now, because we've got a lot to get through here. And we've had a demonstration earlier this week, actually, about health, which Jeremy Corbyn was supposed to come to, but he didn't. He did the TV debate instead, leaving the only empty chair being Theresa May. One of the things that was discussed there and has been in some of the newspapers this week is this thing called the Naylor Review, which Theresa May, when she was talking to Andrew Neil, said she would be implementing in full. Now, this calls for, and I'll put this to you, Jeff, I don't know how much you know about the Naylor Review, I was pretty shocked to see it, calls for NHS land and buildings to be sold off to speculators and developers at half price. Now, this does sound like a kind of full-on privatisation of the resources that the NHS needs to survive.
I can't comment on that because I don't know those specifics. All I can see is an example of something like, if we take Southmead Hospital, where the reinvestment, and I accept it was the Labour government reinvesting in the hospital at the time, has produced a fantastic new hospital. The surplus land will be sold off to help fund the development. But we have a hospital that works far more effectively, is easier to run and operate because actually it's one building rather than a whole series of corridors with a whole series of different entrances and receptions, and therefore it can be administered more effectively. Now, that suggests to me it's a way of getting value for money in what we achieve. So I would see that actually it's sustaining the health service in the changes it needs to make to be more effective.
Now, Jeff, you know your way around a balance sheet, don't you? With the PF, some of these PFI deals, you end up not necessarily even owning the hospital at the end of the day, and they can cost anything up to half as much again to build and to create.
The investment I support entirely. PFI deals, whichever government has set them up, I find totally unacceptable because they are paying significant sums of money out of the state sector. And you're right, what we end up with is quite possibly a building that is owned by someone else at the end of the 25 or 30 years.
Worth saying, and I'll make the point for you, that it was actually Gordon Brown and Tony Blair's government that started this whole rollout.
I was
PFIs.
Sparing Asher that particular problem.
There's no need to spare me. PFI was absolutely wrong, and we're still paying for it. You know, we're, as a local authority, we're trying to find ways in which we can actually renegotiate these PFI. I was going to say something I shouldn't. These PFI deals, because it is crippling. It's crippling us. You know, the amount of, and you're right. At the end of the day, who is actually going to own those buildings at the end of the day? But the other thing, the question you did ask was that Theresa May selling off the land at half
not just land, it's buildings that, as well.
And land and buildings at half the price.
Yeah, what the Naylor Review suggests is that the government should half subsidise land sell-offs.
No more subsidies. No.
So that if a developer wants to buy a hospital and the land underneath it, that the government will contribute half towards that sale. Well, I mean, I was shocked to see this. It's just a little line in an interview. Anyway,
it's a little bit like, isn't it, the whole academisation of schools thing, where you sell off some land or some prime real estate to an academy chain who then build a school on it, but actually if later on down the line they want to shut that school down and build some houses or whatever. I mean, it is a kind of selling off land by the back door sort of arrangement, I think. The fact is the Naylor Report's, not very well known. It's been floating around, not noticed. I mean, one of the reasons why we all probably came into local government is exactly we're the sort of people that reads those reports and likes to go, oi, that's not happening. I think one of the big worries for Bristol, particularly in Bristol West, I have to say, is that things like in Ashley, for example, at least one of the local GP practices has had its rents put up by 500%, which may force it out of business. And of course, you can see how that one works. You're in an NHS property, your rent goes up by NHS services, you're forced out of business and you go bankrupt, and then the building is empty, and then it gets sold, and then it's flats or something, and it's a slippery slope. And this is the sort of thing that I think is problematic, and people like myself and my colleagues are overwhelmed with trying to stop things like this happening all the time. And this is one of the issues with the difference between what Westminster's doing and then here trying to provide good services.
Well, let's have a general question now. I'll start with you again, Jude English, for the Green Party. Is this general election about policies, personalities, or propaganda?
Well, actually, it's about policies. Now, I am very pleased to see that policies have started to surface, some excellent policies, some of them recycled from the Green Party into slightly larger parties, but it's really good to see policies like £10 an hour minimum wage, like no tuition fees for students, like cancelling the student debt, all fantastic Green Party policies now appearing on a Labour Party sheet near you. I mean, I wouldn't say that it's about personalities, although obviously it is as well. We're seeing a bit of a personality kind of crash, I think, going on at the moment. Theresa May saying she's not going to appear on radio. Last few times I've seen her on telly, she's not really looked like a well woman. It does feel a little bit like things are crumbling there personality-wise. And this is one of the problems, isn't it? If you base your whole premise on a personality, on a leader, and then that's not coming up to scratch. Propaganda, well, yes, it is all about propaganda as well, isn't it? And we know that the media is owned, apart from obviously your good self, owned and manipulated by big business. It's really hard to get a clear, coherent message across. There's been almost nothing about the environment, climate change, the fantastically difficult situation we're in terms of fracking and ice caps melting. All that stuff seems to have, disappeared.
People don't often talk about the chairman of the BBC I like to on here, which is this woman, Rona Fairhead, who's was the former chair of the risk committee on HSBC Bank. Mm. So you do wonder, what is it? I mean, are there going to be any good panoramas on HSBC?
No,
I don't think there will be. Anyway, Jeff, what do you think? What do you make of this question? Is it policies, personalities, or propaganda?
I think it's probably a proportion of each of them. There is certainly policies coming to the fore, and it's good to be highlighting the differences between the parties. I still think that in many ways election time isn't the place, but the rest of the time it's really important that we highlight probably the areas of agreement between the parties. And there is a danger that the differences can be portrayed as something that we're going to have a slanging match over, and we might well do in the course of this evening. But in fact, there are a significant number of policies and areas that we would agree on what we're trying to do as far as Bristol's concerned to get the best outcomes for the city. Personality-wise, it's bound to be about that. I would rather it wasn't about the individual leaders, but actually about the people who make up their teams, because it's those teams that are going to be running any government, and it's important that we get to see who they are and what they think.
Well, there was a great piece on ITV News last week, which has actually sort of, in the last year or so, 18 months, seems to have taken on a new lease of life, where they were looking at the very small team around Theresa May that had been involved in policy making, responsible for these 2 weeks ago, what many people now look at as a bit of a disastrous speech about dementia tax, about winter fuel allowance. Do you think that that's part of the problem, is that there's been too few people actually making decisions about what's in the Conservative manifesto, and it's not been, you know, the various dangers of the different policies haven't been shared amongst the party enough?
I think that's absolutely right. It also shows why it's not in the national interest to have a large majority of any party in Parliament, and that looks as though we've been spared that particular problem, because it is important that there is a strong opposition to challenge a strong government. Good opposition makes good government better.
Do you look back on the election of Theresa May? Actually, sorry, it wasn't an election, was it? Last year, you know, Andrea Leadsom stepped down over a weekend. There was a suggestion that she'd fallen on her sword, had her arm twisted behind her back to not stand against. And, of course, around about 120,000 members, I think you've got, none of them got a chance to elect your leader. I mean, maybe that's why we are where we are.
I don't think that was a problem as far as the party was concerned. I think the majority of members I talked to were delighted that we didn't have the agony of a lengthy election process, and that the country had a leader to get on governing. So I don't think that was an issue. I don't think it's an issue now.
Asher Cray for Labour, what do you make of this? Policies, personalities or propaganda? What's it all about this election?
Okay, it started off around personality. That's what Theresa May made it. It was about, it was her versus Jeremy Corbyn. Then we launched the Labour manifesto, and we had them.
Well, it was leaked, wasn't it?
We launched our Labour manifesto, and it had the Tories scurrying around trying to cobble together something of some semblance of a manifesto. And as you've heard, and as you've rightly said, it was put together by a very cliquey, small group of individuals surrounding Theresa May. I understand that when they were launching the manifesto, most of the cabinet were playing catch-up at the actual launch. And propaganda, well, yes, we've seen the media machinery at work making it about personalities. Yes, and we've seen the fallout with the dementia tax and all the other weak and wobbly situations that have surrounded Theresa May. So, but for me, it's definitely about the policies and how Labour is really, you know, we're about the many, not the few. And I think some of the most, if not all of our manifesto pledges are what people on the doorstep, where I'm knocking the doors, and people are really welcoming.
And what do you make, just quickly, all three of you, of the non-interest, it seems, of Theresa May in taking part in the TV debates? Mm. Because, I mean, Corbyn has been doing this as well. He's been fighting shy of them. But, I mean, surely this is the way, isn't it? You know, you can knock on as many doorsteps as you possibly can, but you're not going to reach as many, get into as many people's living rooms unless you go on these debates. Asha, what do you make of all this?
Running scared. You know, she, for me, did not demonstrate. She talks about, you know, put your trust in me, I am a leader. Well, if you're the leader, you're the one who called the election, you should be talking to the electorate and letting them, and let's hear from the horse's mouth. So yeah, big boo-boo on her part, really.
Jeff, do you think this is a mistake for her not to take part in these, or why, and what if so, why?
Do you know, I think it's a really difficult one, because, you know, as you pointed out, Jeremy Corbyn wasn't sure whether he was going to take part or not. I think there is enormous pressure on the leaders. I think these events are stirred up into becoming a media feast, if you like. And I don't think they give an opportunity for a real development of policy and in a constructive way. So I have sympathy with the fact that they are not necessarily the best way of putting a policy forward. I also recognise, however, that if the other parties are present, that by not having the leader of the party present, that may in some way diminish the process. On balance, I think it would have been better to have been there and defended the case, although I have to say it was done extremely well by Amber Rudd standing in for her.
I mean, what do you put this slide in the polls down to? And we started this general election campaign with something like 20% Conservatives ahead. We're now, there's a poll out I saw last night which was saying we're looking at a hung parliament.
Well, it was the lead was always going to diminish because votes were going to, opinions were going to polarise as we got nearer to the election. So I think that was to be anticipated. It's something of an inevitability of what has happened in the period of the campaign. But actually, what we'll really tell is what happens on Thursday of next week.
Jude, what do you think of the role of, not the media generally, but these leadership debates? I mean, they started doing it in the 60s in the US.
I was about to say, funnily enough, I do have some friends who are Tories, and one of them's just written a really interesting book based on his PhD, and it's the history of Tories and television. And, of course, Thatcher knew the value of television. It's well documented that Tories and Conservative politicians have used that media really, really well. So it's almost like parts of the Tory party have forgotten their own history. So not appearing, especially when Mr Corbyn had suddenly said, I'm going to appear, seems to me a poor decision, really. Sending in your second-in-chief or perhaps your lady-in-waiting to stand in for you is not good enough. And tomorrow, in fact, she's not going to appear on Woman's Hour. She's sending Justin Greening instead. Now, this, to me, is not a good position to be in. Anyone knows that it's good for you. As a member of a smaller party who has less access to media, we know that every time Caroline Lucas or Jonathan Bartley or some of our deputy leaders is on the telly, it does us the power of good. You know, that's why Jonathan will be on Question Time on Sunday with Paul, what's his name, from UKIP. Forgotten his name. Never mind.
No, that's okay. Don't mind. That was also interesting, wasn't it, on Question Time last night. I think I'm right in saying there were no Greens on there. Yet there was a UKIP candidate, but the Greens have got an MP and UKIP don't. Mm. You know, you do wonder quite.
Well, you don't wonder. You know exactly, don't you?
Okay, on to another story.
Propaganda, that is. We'll be talking propaganda.
David Dimbleby, Bullingdon Club. Mm. Yes, Boris Johnson actually outed him on live on
and then Paxman last week said, you know, I'm a paid up member of the Tory party, didn't he, after he'd done the leaders debates.
A Conservative candidate, Craig McKinlay, has charged today election fraud. Crown Prosecution Service has made its announcement just days before the country votes in the general election, along also with he's also charged on Nathan Gray, his election agent, and Marion Little, a party organiser, says the Crown Prosecution Service today. Now, Jeff, obviously this one's for you, but I have to say, isn't it a bit peculiar that it's taken them almost exactly 2 years to pursue this case, to charge them literally within... I mean, for a start, that's a very long time to wait before you charge somebody. And then it's just... it always seems timed by the CPS for the general election.
It does seem extraordinary. I haven't followed this very closely, but I presume this is all part of the battle bus issues that have been raised elsewhere. Clearly, there are issues about how that is accounted for and recorded, but either there was a breach or there wasn't, and I have to say, I cannot understand why the timing has been designed to come exactly at this point. I mean, electoral law has to be enforced. I've no problem with that. But if it was not clear enough to be certain that there had been a breach, I do not know why that had to happen a week before a general election.
Because this is all referring to the 2015 general election, and there have been various charges. There's been not charges, fines by the Electoral Commission. There's been against the SNP, against UKIP, against the Labour Party for the stone tablet thing. Everyone's fined. And they've waited right to the last minute to actually charge some three of them with a criminal offence. One of these, Marion Little, was actually made an OBE. So she was given an honour in the New Year's Honours list by David Cameron. So it turns it into a toxic story, Jeff. Jeff, what do you make of it all?
Yeah. No, well, I think it is being dramatised inappropriately. I think that the whole battle bus issue is one where a group of people were travelling the country giving support, and the other cases were dropped purely because there was no grounds to pursue it. And I think this, possibly more time was spent in this constituency.
The other cases where there were fines, in fact, I think £70,000, the highest ever fine by the Electoral Commission.
But I say, to me, the really inappropriate thing is the timing of this, and it does lead to questions of why it's taken so long to piece together, and why, if it's been pieced together, is that prosecution announced today? That's where I feel very uncomfortable.
Jude?
I think it's worse than that, actually, because the reason I think that Theresa May called this election is because she was aware over the course of a weekend. If you think about it, we went, didn't we, from, oh, we're not having it, to I've been away for the weekend walking.
That was Easter, wasn't it?
I've changed my mind. Now, at that point, we knew that these prosecutions were perhaps going to happen. And from my point of view, it seemed likely that if you thought you were going to have more than one person being prosecuted, you might then decide it was worth the gamble of pulling the election out of the bag in order to kind of to distract from it, the fact that it did distract. And then there was an announcement further on, wasn't it, saying that there won't be prosecutions of most of them, and then this one's appeared today, and I think quite seriously this is one that she couldn't get back in the bag. The CPS, there's enough evidence to prosecute, and you know, we know that the powers of be that can do this sort of stuff, but maybe this is one that they could not keep in the bag until after the election, and that's why it's popping out now. And I think in some ways the fact that the rest of them got away with it is also dubious. Yeah, 2 years to get this stuff sorted out is ridiculous, and it doesn't make you feel good about electoral processes in general, does it?
No, I mean, I don't know if the UN are going to be coming monitoring this one next week. We'll see. But anyway, Asha, what do you make of these prosecutions?
I do concur with the point that Jude has just made. There's no smoke without fire, and you know, after 2 years of investigation, 14 police forces, I understand, were involved in this. And
well, this one is just one police force in Kent.
Well, yes, but there were 14 police forces at one time all involved in investigating. The timing is perfect. Perfect.
I mean, it moves into a different conversation, doesn't it, which I think is equally interesting to listeners of this show, about money, dark money, and what really buys an election. And it takes us almost full circle back to our initial conversation about Trump and how did he get where he is. You know, I don't think it takes a genius to work out that there's a lot of money in data analytics, there's a lot of money in manipulation of the media, in Facebook and all the rest of it. We know that the Leave campaign is being investigated at the moment. We know, sitting here, that we're allowed to spend quite a small amount of money on each campaign for our parliamentary candidates. And I know that we've got a treasurer in the Green Party who is down to the last, tuppence. Exactly. We are absolutely, on the ball with that. But we're talking about small amounts of money, really, in the thousands.
There's another aspect to all this general election and the timing, because the Labour Party was due to review its candidates and possibly deselect some of them, and that's also been a part of this. What do you make of that?
I don't think that's a part of why Theresa May.
Well, it means effectively that most of the anti-Corbyn Labour MPs are about to be re-elected for another 5 years.
From that side of the, if you're going to say it works to the advantage of some of those candidates who may have been vulnerable.
Some call the Blair.
Some of them will be sitting thinking, phew, I may have got away with it this time. In fact, I was talking to a Labour activist yesterday about exactly this. So, you could equally say that our MP, Caroline Lucas, would be relieved that this election is being fought with the current boundaries, because the next time an election is fought, the boundaries in Brighton will be gerrymandered so that things are more difficult there. So I think you could say there's swings and roundabouts there. Yes, I'm sure there's some Labour candidates being a big sour.
Asher, what do you make of this idea that potentially there's a load of anti-Corbyn Labour MPs about to be re-elected, and that's part of why the election's timed as it is? And that actually might not be good for Labour, because you'll end up with this continuing civil war for the next 5 years.
I don't believe that we will continue with this civil war. I think, the summer is over. Yes, there may be some kind of stuff simmering amongst kind of party members per se, but the Labour Party has come together over the last few months, really, after, we've accepted Jeremy is our leader. He has been elected. And
twice.
Exactly. And we have increased, on top of that, we've increased the membership even more significantly over the last few months. So, no, I don't think there's really anything in it whatsoever. Everyone is pulling together. Everyone is working for the same cause.
Jeff, do you think this bodes well if Labour do quite well in this election, as it looks as if the polls are suggesting might do much better than we thought they were originally, that the conflicts within the party might continue?
It's challenging enough speculating on what goes on in my own party, let alone what's going on in the Labour Party. I think we'll have to see what happens after the election. I think there is a concern, and it's certainly difficult to see how a leader in Parliament can represent a group and lead a group of MPs who don't have confidence in him as a leader.
Well, the tension is between the MPs, will be anyway, between the Labour MPs and the Labour membership. That's what's going to continue.
Absolutely, but I think one will have to see what happens in this election and what position the Labour Party is in afterwards.
There's another thing. I mean, I suppose
you should need to come out canvassing and on the campaign trail, because trust me, there is more than a coming together.
I think if the Labour Party does as polls are currently suggesting, then I suspect you will find that members of Parliament may reassess their view. So, to be honest, a lot will depend on the outcome, and not just the percentage of votes, but actually what that delivers in members of Parliament.
There are some people, I've spoken to one Labour councillor, saying that they're mystified about why the Conservatives are falling so fast in the polls, seem to be putting every single foot wrong in this general election campaign. And one of the things they're suggesting is that actually, at the top, the Conservative Party is scared to death of having to deal with Brexit.
It's an interesting scenario that I've not heard expressed before. I think the Prime Minister is relishing the challenge of dealing with Brexit, and I think she is looking to getting the best possible deal for the country. And actually, to me, that is the most important issue about this election, is how we're going to deal with something. I didn't want us to be in this position of having to negotiate leaving anyway, but the fact that we are there, really important that we negotiate the best deal we can for the future jobs, future economy of the country. And we've talked about education, we've talked about health service. Actually, we need a sound economy to be able to carry on funding those services at the level they need funding. And what's going to determine that most of all is who negotiates the best deal we can get for leaving the EU.
We just want to squeeze this item in here because one of the problems we have is actually sometimes translating the central government cuts down to how they're actually being effective or otherwise at a local level. And yesterday I went down to the Hartcliffe City Farm where I spoke to a chap called Barry Lewis. Now, they only require £15,000 of our public money a year to carry on, and judging by the number of children, he reckons around about 20,000 every summer benefit from the city farm, get a bit of a chance to have to actually get to know what the farm animals are like, where their food comes from, that sort of thing. And so I spoke to him yesterday about what he thinks about why their city farm funding has been pulled by this local authority, in fact by Mayor Marvin Rees.
My name's Barry Lewis and this is Hartcliffe Farm. We've been having children come in up here now for over 34 years, and it's going to miss out. Nobody else, it's those children and the ones who's coming on. The new mayor should rethink his priorities in Hartcliffe. We got a nice building, you can do teas and coffees, and we have parties. We got bouncy castle there. Down in our other building, we got a jumbo cell. We do, and he does cakes and things like that. But it's the animals, is mostly. That's the ones that the people comes up and see. We got pigs, sheep, cows, chickens, ducks, geese, turkeys, peacocks. We have. And my role here is trying to keep it going. That's all my role's about. I'm a director on the board, and I want to get as much money to keep it going for the future of the kids in Hartcliffe, Widdywood, Whitchurch, Bishopsworth. You comes out here for nothing, you can park for nothing, and it gets them out of their four walls at what they're looking at, and this is one of the most deprived areas there is, and they're cutting this funding, and it's never right. It deals with mental health people. And I don't know what's going to happen to them. They could just commit suicide. And whose fault? It'd be on my shoulders, these people. It was relying on me.
So why is the council not sticking up for beautiful spaces like this?
They want to build houses on it. I'm sure they do. I'm sure that they want... Because I was down the aerial housing, and that Paul Smith, who's a councillor, he was saying how many hectares, how many houses you can get on an hectare, and that ain't up here. This could be another estate where it's so big.
You're right on the edge of the city here, aren't you?
Yeah, yeah. Beautiful views. The houses up here, yeah. Be worth a fortune.
So what have you done to try and get people behind your campaign?
Well, I've been to all the pubs I knows, all the clubs I knows. I'm going around selling eggs in the clubs, in the pubs. I've raised them quite a lot of money up to now. They said so. So I got to keep on selling the eggs. The council owns the land, but it's supposed to be the people's land anyhow, because it was donated to us as a community, and it's for the people of Hartcliffe, Widdywood, Eye Ridge, Whitchurch. It's supposed to be for all the area what ain't got a farm, that the kiddies can come in and see a cow or see a goat. Because a lot of the kids comes in here and he goes to the supermarket and that's where you get your milk. You know, things like that. And with education, and we do a lot of educational stuff up here with disability people.
How many kids come through here every year?
Well, it must be over 20,000. Must be. It's loads. Up here in the summer, it's even. You know, you can't move in our park. Yeah. And seeing the animals and that. It's essential to the community. We got nothing in the community at the moment. And they want to take this away, the farm. Well, they took the aerial housing office away. Nobody wants to take this away.
I mean, of course, if Marvin was sitting next to us, the mayor, Marvin Rees, he would say, well, he's just having to implement cuts from the central government.
He turned around and said to me, he said, Hartcliffe gets too much money. Why have we in the little city farm, St Werburgh's and Lawrence Hill, they have all their money and we ain't had ours? Tell me that.
Well, that was the voice of Barry Lewis from Hartcliffe City Farm speaking to me yesterday. Asher Craig, you're a part of the party running the city at the moment.
In fact,
I'm
the cabinet member responsible for the funding of the voluntary and community
sector. So it's £15,000 of our money that we pay in taxes. It's not a lot to keep the place going, is it?
It's not a lot to keep going, but I think as you quite rightly said in your piece, you know, we are under extreme financial pressure. We are one of the last remaining local authorities in the country that's actually still have a grants programme for the voluntary and community sector. It is a finite amount of money. Organisations had to bid for that funding. There is no entitlement to the funding, because that is the other issue that I'm not just talking about this organisation. There are a lot of organisations in this city, and I have been around, like I said, for 30 years, who have year in, year out, received funding, and this year we implemented a system by which you have to apply and meet the criteria. Many organisations fail to meet the criteria, therefore they were not funded. So it's not a case of Windmill Hill against Hartcliffe City Farm. I'm sure they were all assessed, and those applications that met the criteria got the funding.
So this is a facility you're happy to see close, is it?
It's not about me saying that it's a facility that has to. What I'm saying is that there are many other organisations, as with Hartcliffe, who actually got their funding cut completely. Okay, some people made a bit of noise, but guess what? A lot of those organisations have become quite resilient and are looking at alternative ways of trying to raise funding and accept the fact that we have not got enough money to spread across the whole
Jude,
of the city.
Jude, I know you've done a lot of work in Hartcliffe.
I have done a lot of work in Hartcliffe, and in fact, in 2006, I was a director of that very city farm. I'm now a director of St. Werburgh City Farm, and it's very interesting. It is a very successful farm, and it has no funding from the council at the moment. We were told 5 years ago that there would be a funding reduction. So all the city farms have known this is happening, and it's been up to them to have a development plan and a fundraising plan and health and safety and all the rest of it. What I will say about Hartcliffe Farm is that Hartcliffe Farm has had its ups and downs over the years, and it is a very resilient organisation. Money seems to come in and out. It has times when it's got more money and less money. It's been well provided for by the council over the years. But what it does have is a fantastic piece of land. Barry alluded to it there. It's got more land than any other city farm to develop, to have all those animals on.
But you're happy to see it close?
It will not close, because they still have the lease. There is massive opportunity for people to do excellent stuff there. There's a load of organisations also working. There's things like Heeg. There's things like Hartcliffe Ventures, Witherwood Ventures. And people will pull together, and the farm will not close. But like all the other farms, it has to become more self-sufficient. So although Barry said selling the eggs, there's funding bids, there's big lottery bids, there's stuff like that, and I'm sure there are council employees who'll be happy to help them sort that out. I mean, as Asha says, it's not an entitlement, and it sounds a bit harsh, but in some ways it is not being singled out. The other city farms, including St. Werburgh's, didn't get money.
The people in Hartcliffe will just see this as well. This is, the Tories don't care about us around here. This is central government cuts coming down.
But I think this is down to the challenge that the council's got and that the mayor's got of how to balance a budget. None of us want to close a particular facility. None of us want to see a community farm go. But the point that I think we've each made is about sustainability. We can't have a situation where year after year after year grants are paid to organisations that simply each year put in an application to receive the same amount of money. Actually, we've got to find ways of developing these organisations to be sustainable, to find alternative ways.
So if they
ways
have to close, are you happy to see that?
I'm not. Of course I'm not happy to see it close. But we have to find ways of raising funds to make these organisations work. We simply cannot keep on putting more funds into these voluntary organisations on a continuous basis.
Okay, thanks. No, sorry, because we don't have time. Time for the Murdoch News at 6 now. Thanks to our guests, Conservative Councillor for Westbury-on-Trim, Jeff Gollop, you just heard from there, Green Councillor for Ashley, Jude English, and Labour Councillor for St George West, Asha Craig. After the Murdoch News, the West's kingmakers are huddled together again with Kissinger and other serial war criminals until Sunday, holed up in the Westfield's Marriott Hotel in Chantilly, Virginia, choosing next presidents, prime ministers for around Europe and the United States, just a stone's throw from the White House. And we'll be hearing from there after the Murdoch News.
Live at 6 from the Sky News Centre.